2 Samuel chapter 2. And this morning I would like for us to consider some thoughts that are derived from a place. It's a place that had some significance in the Old Testament, and I think has great significance to us in terms of spiritual lessons that we can draw from what we see in terms of this place and what happened there. The place is the city and or region of Hebron. It's not a place that we talk about a lot, but I think as we look at it this morning, you'll see that it really has great significance to us. I've entitled my message this morning, Living in Hebron, a place of dependence on God. 2 Samuel chapter 2, we'll read verse 1, verse 11, and then over to chapter 5, a few verses there. So 2 Samuel chapter 2, verse 1 says, "And it came to pass after this, that David inquired of the Lord, saying, Shall I go up into any of the cities of Judah? And the Lord said unto him, Go up. And David said, Whither shall I go up? And he said, Unto Hebron. Verse 11, And the time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. And over to chapter 5, verses 1 through 5. Then came all the tribes of Israel to David unto Hebron, and spake, saying, Behold, we are thy bone and thy flesh. Also in time past when Saul was king over us, thou wast he that leddest out and broughtest in Israel. And the Lord said to thee, Thou shalt feed my people Israel, and thou shalt be a captain over Israel. So all the elders of Israel came to the king to Hebron, and King David made a league with them in Hebron before the Lord. And they anointed King David over Israel. David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years. In Hebron, he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months. Now, that first verse we read, verse 1 of chapter 2, says it came to pass after this. Well, what was this? What had just happened? Well, what had just happened was the death of Saul and his sons. David, as you know, had been anointed king, but had not been serving as king as Saul finished out his term, and his term ended with his death because of his disobedience. So Saul and his sons are now dead. David had been living in the wilderness areas of Israel, running for his life most of the time, hiding, living more like a bandit than like a king. But the obstacles are now out of the way. And David gets the news of Saul's death and his son's death, and David is grieved because of his love for them in spite of the way he was treated by Saul, and also by his reverence for the anointed of God. And here he realizes that his time has come. And he had developed a practice that started in his youth, and that was that he would inquire of the Lord. And throughout the life of David, we find that term repetitively. When David faced some type of decision, most of the time we read that he inquired of the Lord. The times that he failed to do that were times of failure in David's life, times where he made decisions based on his own reasoning, his own thinking, but didn't ask God what to do. So here he knew he had been anointed and appointed king, and he asked God, he says, Shall I go up into any of the cities of Judah? And the Lord said unto him, Go up. And David said, Whither shall I go up? And he said, Unto Hebron. Now, why there? Why would God tell David to go up to this city of Hebron? What was the significance of it? Turn, if you will, to Genesis chapter 13. Genesis chapter 13 is the first time in the scripture that we encounter this place. And we'll read the better part of this chapter, chapter 13 of Genesis. And Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot was with him, into the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, unto the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. And Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. And the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle, and the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled in the land, then in the land. And Abram said unto Lot, Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me, and I will take, if thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. If thou wilt depart to the right, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves one from the other. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. And the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, Lift up now thine eyes, and look from the place where thou art northward and southward and eastward and westward, for all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land, in the length of it and the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. Then Abram removed his tent, and came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which is in Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord. Now, Abraham had demonstrated his faith in God. God had told him to leave his home place, to leave his relatives, to go out, the scripture says, not knowing where he would go. And Abram at that time followed. He obeyed. And God led him up through Ur, and then, I mean, away from Ur, up through Haran, and then down to the land of Canaan. And that's the land that he would promise him and that he would give him. So as a result of Abram's blessing up to that point, or Abram's obedience up to that point, God began to bless him. And here we find Abram and his nephew Lot having an abundance. Their flocks had multiplied. Their servants had multiplied. Now they found that there was constant strife because there wasn't enough room for them to live together. So Abram realized that that wasn't right. There shouldn't be strife between them. And he tells Lot, you decide where you want to go. And Lot looked and Lot saw what he thought was the best land available. Now Abram had every right to take that land. Every right to tell Lot to go somewhere else. He had taken this young man with him, a young man whose father no longer lived. He had taken him, as it were, as a son, and he had received the blessing of God as a result of being with Abram. Abraham had no reason to give him the best land, and yet he did it. What do we learn from that? What do we see from that? I think we see an attitude in Abram that would serve us well. It's an attitude of total dependence on God. He was willing to give up what humanly looked like the logical choice. Humanly speaking, anyone in their right mind would have gone for the well-watered plain. What better place for his herds and his flocks to grow and to thrive? What better place for God to continue the promise of blessing from a human perspective? And yet Abram was willing to leave his destiny, his well-being, totally in God's hands. He was willing to take the mountainous region, the region that not many people would choose, and he allows Lot to have first choice. Over in Hebrews chapter 11, we get a commentary on what was going on in Abraham's mind. Hebrews chapter 11, verses 8 through 10. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed, and he went out not knowing whither he went. By faith he sojourned in the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker was God. You see, Abraham wasn't looking for worldly success. He was looking for the place that God would bless him. That was the desire of his heart. That was the strongest desire of his heart. He wanted to be right in the middle of a place where God would bless him. He chose a place called Hebron. Now, turn over to Numbers chapter 13, and we find this place of Hebron again. And each time we find it, I think we learn a little bit more about it. We know of Abraham's descendants and how he had a son, and his son had a son, and his son had 12 sons. And through the direction and sovereignty of God, they ended up outside of the land that God had promised them. They ended up in Egypt, and I've often kind of wondered, well, if God promised them Canaan, why did he send Joseph ahead of them to prepare the way for them to go to a place which was not the land he promised? And my conclusion is God wanted them to get a full dose of what the world would give them. He wanted them to see firsthand the bondage of the world, so that they would never, ever seek it again. And so they found themselves down in Egypt, and they saw the deliverance of God. They returned to the border of this land that he had promised to give Abraham and his descendants. And in Numbers 13, we find them poised and ready to enter the land. He had promised to take them there and to bless them. So let's start reading down in verse 17. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said unto them, get you up this way southward, and go up into the mountain, and see the land, what it is, and the people that dwelleth there, whether they be strong or weak, few or many, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that they dwell in. Whether in tents or in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood there or not. And be ye of good courage, and bring the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob, as men come to Hamath. And they ascended by the south and came unto Hebron, where Ahiman, Shishai, Talmai, and the children of Anak were. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. And they came unto the brook of Eshcol, and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff, and they brought of the pomegranates and of the figs, and the place was called the brook Eshcol because of the cluster of grapes which the children cut down from thence, and they returned from searching the land 40 days. And now down to verse 27. And they told him and said, we came unto the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. they came to Hebron. And they saw wonderful things there. They saw that which would delight the heart of any man. But that's not all they saw. Look at verse 28. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwelt in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. Moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. There were giants, dangerous enemy, strong forces that would seek to keep them from dwelling in that place that God had promised them, that would seek to keep them from receiving the benefit and the pleasure of what He had promised to provide by His own hands. Now, once again, if we turn to the book of Hebrews, chapter 3, we get a commentary. Starting at verse 10 of Hebrews chapter 3. It says, "Wherefore, I was grieved with that generation, and said, They do always err in their heart, and they have not known my ways. So I swear in my wrath that they should not enter into my rest. Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. For we are made partakers of Christ, if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast to the end, while it is said today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts, as in the provocation. For some, when they had heard, did provoke, albeit not all that came out of Egypt by Moses. But with whom was he grieved 40 years? Was it not with them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness? And to whom sware he that they should not enter into his rest, but to them that believed not? So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief." As they came to the place that God had promised them, a place that He had promised with no degree of uncertainty, that it would be a place of blessing. And yet, because of what they saw, because of what they feared, they failed to enter that place. Well, we find it again over in the book of Joshua. Joshua chapter 10, starting at verse 36. They had wandered now for 40 years. Most of them had died. They were now poised to enter into the land, to take that which had been waiting for them all along, requiring nothing on their part except to go in. And here, with Joshua's leadership, they go into the land, and what do we find? We find a series of victories. And in verse 36 of Joshua 10, it says, "And Joshua went up from Eglon, and all Israel with him unto Hebron, and they fought against it, and they took it, and smote it with the edge of the sword. And the king thereof, and all the cities thereof, and all the souls that were therein, he left none remaining according to all he had done to Eglon, but destroyed it utterly, and all the souls that were therein." Well, what did Joshua find? You remember this Joshua. He was one that had gone in to spy out the land. He was one that came back with a good report. He said, "It's everything that we desire. Let's go take it. There's no reason not to take it." He also had another with him, a kindred spirit named Caleb. Caleb also desired this place. Look at Joshua 14. Starting at verse 6. "Then the children of Judah came unto Joshua in Gilgal. And Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said unto him, Thou knowest the thing that the Lord said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and thee in Kadesh Barnea. 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to espy out the land. And I brought him word again, as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly follow the Lord. And Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land whereon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance, and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord my God. And now behold, the Lord hath kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, even since the Lord spake this word unto Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness, and now, I am this day 85 years old, yet I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me, and my strength was then, even so is my strength now for war, both to go out and to come in. Now, therefore, give me this mountain. Whereof the Lord spoke in that day. For thou heardest in that day how the Anakims were there, and that the cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. And Joshua blessed him and gave unto Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, Hebron, for an inheritance. Here was a man that had fully, wholly followed the Lord. He desired that place. He desired that place of total dependence on God. That's what filled his heart. That was his dream, to live in that place, to be in that place of total dependence on God. He wanted a place of blessing. Now, certainly the entire land was to be a place of blessing, but there was something special about this mountain. It was Hebron. It was a place of dependence on God. Now, let's go back for a minute to David. God tells him to go up to Hebron. David had been chosen king over Israel. He would be a man that would have many servants. As king, he would be in a position of tremendous wealth. There would be nothing that he couldn't enjoy. As king, he would command the most powerful military force on the face of the earth at that time. As king, he could have virtually anything that he wanted. And he asked God, where do you want me to go? Do you want me to go to a place of independence? Do you want me to go to a place where I'll be exalted? No, God said, I want you to go to Hebron. You've been dependent on me up to this point. I want you to continue in that place of dependence. For it would be in that place of dependence that God would bring blessing. Now, there's an event in David's life that I think is an example of him forsaking the place of dependence on God. It's over in 1 Chronicles chapter 21. It's toward the end of his life. And by and large, David had lived a good life. He had been a man after God's own heart. He had had failures. God had forgiven his failures. Here we find this little event that I think is symbolic of David leaving the place of dependence on God alone. It says in verse 1 of chapter 21 of 1 Chronicles, and Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel. And David said to Joab and to the rulers of the people, go, number Israel from Beersheba even to Dan, and bring the number of them to me that I may know it. And Joab answered, the Lord make his people 100 times so many more as they be. But my lord the king, are they not all my lord's servants? Why then doth my lord require this thing? Why will he be a cause of trespass to Israel? Now, what's the big deal? He wanted to take a census. But even this man, Joab, saw something in that that he knew was an affront to God. Nevertheless, the king's words prevailed against Joab, whereas Joab departed and went throughout all Israel and came to Jerusalem. And Joab gave the sum of the number of the people to David. And all they of Israel were 1,000,000 and 100,000 men that drew the sword. And Judah was 430,000 men that drew the sword. But Levi and Benjamin counted he not among them, for the king's word was abominable to Joab. And God was displeased with this thing. Therefore he smote Israel. Now what was David doing? He was looking to something other than God, wasn't he? He wanted to know how many men he had. He wanted to know what the strength of his military power was. He was no longer thinking of God as his sole defender. He got caught up with all of the stuff around him and forgot that it was God that had promised to be his shield, to be his defender, to be his high tower, his rock. Where is our Hebron? Do we have such a place that we should live? Well, I think maybe we get a glimpse of it over in 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Verses 17 and 18. Here Paul draws on many different passages in the Old Testament. He doesn't quote any particularly, but the concept that he gives here could be said of Abraham. It could be said of his people all through the Old Testament. Here he relates it to us, to you and me, to the church. He says, "Wherefore come out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. And I will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty." He tells them to come out from among them. Now, to whom does this refer? Who were they to come out from among? Well, we know that they were not to literally leave the people that they were surrounded by, because earlier in this same book, in chapter 5, Paul tells them they are ambassadors for Christ. So it's not that they were to go and live in a commune somewhere, that they were to withdraw themselves from the people that they were exposed to. They were to be there for a purpose, to represent Christ in the world. But if you go back and you look at the verses preceding this, you find that he's talking about those who live in unrighteousness. Those who do not believe in God. Those who are caught up with false idols. Those whose lives are more characterized by darkness than by truth. We're to separate ourselves from them. We're not to get caught up with the things they get caught up in. I guess that's the simplest way to put it. We're not to let their practices influence us. We're not to let their thoughts of security and provision influence our thoughts of those things. No, he wants us to live in Hebron. He says, come out from among them, and what? And I will be to you a father. Now, it's a conditional phrase, isn't it? It's not dealing with our salvation. It's dealing with our lifestyle. Come out from among them. Quit looking to them for what you want, and then you'll find in me an almighty Father, one who can meet any need that you have. This week, I was meeting with one of the business owners that I work with on a regular basis, and he was wrestling with an issue. And I think it speaks to this principle. And I'm not going to attempt to articulate for you what it is you might be looking to other than God. The Holy Spirit can do a very adequate job of that. But this is just an example. And this business owner has a customer that owed him several thousand dollars and that is not paying. And our typical thought process would be something like, well, ultimately you might have to get an attorney and you might have to take this guy to court to get the money that he owes you. He did the work. There was nothing wrong with the work he did. The guy just simply isn't paying him. And as we were talking about it, he told me about a dilemma that he had. And that dilemma was a biblical dilemma. He had been reading in the book of Luke, Luke chapter 6. Turn there. Luke chapter 6. And this is one of those passages that I don't know about you, but I have read it and tended to pigeonhole it or excuse it away or say it doesn't relate or something like that. Luke chapter 6, verses 27 through 36. Christ is talking to his disciples and he says, "But I say unto you which hear, love your enemies, do good to them that hate you, bless them that curse you, and pray for them which despitefully use you. And unto him that smiteth thee on one cheek, offer also the other. And to him that taketh away thy cloak, forbid not to take away thy coat also. Give to every man that asketh of thee, and of him that taketh away thy goods, ask them not again. And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. For if ye love them which love you, what thank have ye? For sinners also love those that love them. And if you do good to them which do good to you, what thank have ye? For sinners also do even the same. And if ye lend to them of whom ye hope to receive, what thank have ye? For sinners also lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love ye your enemies and do good and lend, hoping for nothing again. And your reward shall be great. And you shall be children of the Highest. For he is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil." And as he referred me to that passage and we read it together, I had a hard time coming up with a reason why that didn't relate to his circumstances. I had a hard time telling him that he should not be willing to walk away. I mean, isn't that what it says? Did I misread it? Did I misunderstand it? I don't think so. Then both of us, as it were, I think by the Holy Spirit, were reminded of a passage in 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2, starting at verse 21. "For even hereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that ye should follow in his steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him who judgeth righteously." Now, it's easy to take this situation that this guy was dealing with and tell him, yeah, well, I think that's what you ought to do because it's not my thousands of dollars. What would you do? What would you think is the right thing to do if someone wanders onto your property and walks off with your lawnmower? What would you do? What would we do? But what did it say? You see, Jesus, it says here, he left us an example. That means there's something to follow. We are to follow his example. Not anybody else's, not the world's, but his. It says, when he was reviled, he reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not. If there was anybody who had the right to speak back, certainly it was him. If there was anybody who had the right to strike back, certainly it was him. If there was anybody who had the right to take back, it would have been him. But he didn't. He did none of those things. But what did he do? What did it say he did? It said he committed himself to him that judgeth right. And I believe that's what our place of dependence is. I believe that has something to do with where our Hebron is. It's a place where we commit things to him that judges righteously. Jeff has spoken before about things that are not ours, things that belong to God alone. And one of them is what? Vengeance. We're not to take vengeance on people. But these verses would seem to broaden it out, wouldn't it? It speaks of a place of dependence. Now, that's just one example. Just one. That may not be something you deal with. But every one of us, have certain things that we're depending on in addition to God. And he wants them all gone. He wants a place of soul dependence on him. Let me ask you a question. Are you living in Hebron? Are you depending on God alone for what you need? It's not so much a question of what you have. For he gave David great abundance. He gave Abraham great abundance. But it was more their attitude toward those things. It was their desire to look only to God for the things that they need. And he's promised us that if we seek first the kingdom of God, that the things that we have need of should not be a concern. He will provide. It's a question of what we're resting in, more than what we have. What are we resting in today? Are we living in Hebron? I'd like Bert, if he would, to come and lead us in the hymn, I Surrender All. And as we sing this, I pray that we'll each think about this place of Hebron. And is it a place that we've chosen to dwell?
somebody you can call on to do that, isn't it?